We had quite a long conversation about Peter, and I had suggested in the course of our sermon a couple of, well, it's quite a number of weeks ago now, that Peter might have failed to obey Jesus and the Word of God because he loved Jesus so much. And that's proved to be a hard word for us, maybe because it wasn't a way that we had approached that before, but maybe because it's just simply very difficult to believe that we could fall into what amounts to a grievous sin with the best of intentions. And so I was thinking about that, and then I've been thinking about the class that we just finished on Wednesday nights. The class that I've been teaching was called Living Unstuck. And we were wrestling with the destructive patterns and self-destructive behavior and all that stuff that we seem to not be able to break out of. And here we are in the Church of the Nazarene, part of the holiness movement, and we say things like we can be sanctified and we can be set free and we can be transformed, and yet so many of us find ourselves repeating the same patterns over and over again, never quite able to wrestle out of that domination of sin in our lives. And so we studied a class because I'm under the impression that kind of freedom doesn't come from some sort of a magic wand. I don't think that God simply comes to us and touches us and all of a sudden all the things that have ever happened to us, we're set free from them, and now we just move in healthy patterns forever without ever a thought or a concern again. I'm just not convinced that's the way it happens. I'm convinced that it's all God's work. But I'm convinced that we must participate with him and cooperate with him in what he's trying to do in our lives. And so that's what that class was about. And somehow that class began to dovetail in my mind with Peter and his experience. And then I started thinking about Judas too, because somehow they're all tangled together. I'm believing that sometimes sin sneaks up on us, that sometimes we find ourselves in the middle of things and places that we never would have imagined we would find ourselves in. And even though we can't quite figure out how in the world the journey that we took from where we started to where we ended up even took place, here we are, we find ourselves in a situation in which Peter found himself, Judas found themselves, having betrayed Jesus. Now, I'm convinced that Peter started out on that journey because he loved Jesus so much, he could not imagine any good reason for ever denying him, for ever forsaking him. And even though Jesus quoted the scriptures and told him that when the shepherd was struck, the sheep should scatter, Peter took that more as a challenge than a command. And he thought, oh yeah, well, I won't do it. And he loved Jesus so much, he refused to heed the warning of the apostles. And so he stuck with Jesus, and that led him into a courtyard where he denied Jesus three times. But he was not the only one to deny Jesus that night. Judas, too, had betrayed his Lord. And we have so much less about Judas. We have no idea what his motivation was. We have no idea why he betrayed Jesus. Hints, suspicions, whispers, maybe you all have a theory. But whatever his motivation, he and Peter on that night found themselves in precisely the same place. Judas had betrayed Jesus to the governing authorities. Peter had denied knowing Jesus before men. What happens next? Well, in that class on Wednesday nights, we were talking, for those who were there, this will be review. For those who weren't, then we'll fill you in. We're talking about the way in which sin can sneak up on us. And we find ourselves in a moment, whether it's a moment of rage when we're supposed to be holy and purified and not give in to that sort of thing, or a moment of temptation that we've given into, or a moment in which somebody backs into our car in the parking lot and we go after them and then we start suing them and we find ourselves in the course of this lawsuit saying, am I trying to get rich over this? How did I get here? What happens? It seemed like when we were talking about the story of Peter, we spent a lot of time talking about what he should have done, what he might have done. But that's all about the past. What does he do after he's failed? And for that, we have to turn to the Gospel according to John. So if you do have Bibles, I'll invite you to open them to John chapter 21. Both Judas and Peter failed Jesus. Both Judas and Peter probably despaired whether or not they would ever be restored. But one of them finds himself with Jesus on the shores of the Sea of Galilee having a conversation, and the other one did not survive the night. We're going to try and look at those two pieces of this puzzle and try and answer the question, what happens after the wheels fall off? What happens after we have failed? And I focused so hard in that sermon on Peter to try and emphasize his good intentions that led him to sin, because I am convinced that when good intentions lead us to sin, that becomes a sin that is perhaps the hardest to turn away from, because we don't see how we could have avoided it. And I think that's true with Peter. Now Judas, he commits suicide. He doesn't wait for Jesus to be resurrected from the dead, even though Jesus had prophesied that. He doesn't go to the place where Jesus had told the disciples to gather. He doesn't spend any time like that. Judas becomes so absorbed with his wickedness, so overwhelmed by his failure, that he takes his own life before he can have another conversation with Jesus. But Peter, who failed him in the same way, doesn't despair, at least not to that extent. He continues to obey after having failed Jesus. He goes to the place where Jesus said that he would meet him, and he waits. And Peter is rewarded with this conversation in John chapter 21. This is John chapter 21, beginning in verse 15. I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" That must have been a hard thing to hear, I would imagine, for Peter. Because Peter had claimed to love Jesus more than everyone else. You remember when we preached through that section of Mark, when Jesus said, "All of you will betray me. All of you will abandon me." Peter says, "Not me, Lord. Even if all the rest of these yahoos abandon you, I will die for you." Right? That's what Peter claimed. He claimed that he was more faithful to Jesus than anybody else, that he loved Jesus more than anybody else, and yet his behavior proved that that was not, in fact, the case. And so Jesus, not one to pull any punches on poor Peter, right? "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" And Peter said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lamb." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." Now before we move on to verse 18, I suspect it took Peter the three times to recognize what Jesus was doing. Three times Peter had denied knowing Jesus before people to save his own life. Three times Jesus asked him if he loved him. Some of you have heard sermons on this passage where a lot is made of the Greek words for love being used here. I'm not going to do that because, you may want to know why later, but I don't think it's important. I think what's important is that three times Peter has opportunity to declare his love. But what I'm more interested in is what Jesus asked Peter to do as a way of coming back. Now, Peter had failed to follow Jesus all the way because he had failed to be loyal to the scriptures and he had failed to obey Jesus. But he had also failed because of his loyalty to Jesus. He didn't like that the scriptures told him he should abandon him, so he rejected that. So you'd think maybe Jesus, if he wants him to come back, would say something like, "Swear loyalty to me and never do that again. Swear loyalty to the scriptures and promise me you'll never disobey. Get on the right track, Peter. I'm so sick and tired of you making these decisions that are so self-centered and so selfish. If you really love me, you'll forsake all that stuff and you'll simply follow me." But you see, Peter had already followed Jesus. And even though he had failed him, he had not stopped following. He had still gone to this place where they had agreed to meet, and he was waiting for Jesus. And then when he met Jesus, he continued to meet with the disciples, and they gathered with Jesus over the course of 40 days. He was still following Jesus. But there was something he needed to do. He needed to take his eye off of himself. He needed to put it onto others. Jesus' response to Peter is, if you love me, Peter, you will start caring for other believers. If you really love me, Peter, you'll stop thinking about all that stuff that motivates Peter through the whole gospel. My faithfulness, my loyalty, my fidelity, what people think of me, whether or not I'll be a failure, right? That's all that Peter's concerned with. And he says, if you love me, you'll stop talking about yourself and recognize that I'm calling you to feed others. In fact, this is what happens in verse 18. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt to go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you'll stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go. He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, follow me. So here Jesus indicates to Peter that you're not going to get what you hope to get by following me. You're not going to get powerful. You're not going to get influential. You're not going to get to show off with how faithful you are the way that he always did with the other disciples, right? Who loves Jesus more? I love him more. Who's going to be more faithful? I'm going to be more faithful. Who's not going to abandon him? I won't abandon him. I'm first of the disciples. When Jesus is missing, I go looking for him. That's Peter. Jesus says to him, if you want to follow me, you have to stop worrying about your own holiness. And you need to feed my sheep. What does it mean to follow Jesus? For Peter, it meant that one day he would even lose that autonomy that he so valued. The ability to be strong and do what he wants and take care of himself, make his own decisions, be his own man. That's Peter all the way through. And Jesus reveals to him that when he is old, he will not have that right. That in fact, those freedoms will be taken away from him. That he'll be a man with no control. And then he tells Peter again, will you follow me? And I like Peter's response in verse 20. Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved, who we assume is the Apostle John writing this book, following them. He was the one who had reclined next to Jesus at the supper and had said, Lord, who is it that's going to betray you? When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, Lord, what about him? Don't you love that response? Well, that's a terrible prophecy, Jesus. What do you say? What about him? What about that guy? What's going to happen to him? Is he going to have to live that way? Is this like what we all are going to have to endure? Is this just for me? And Jesus said to him, if it's my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? Follow me. What does it take to follow Jesus after we have failed him? Well, we understand for Peter that part of what it takes is a willingness to stay and wait for Jesus. Judas didn't have that. Secondly, for Peter, Peter learns that it takes a process of turning the eye off of ourselves and turning the eye onto others. That somehow to follow Jesus truly, we have to be less concerned with our appearance and our faithfulness and our steadfastness and our holiness, and we have to begin to show greater concern for the needs and the concerns of others. Feed my sheep. And somehow it is in having an eye fixed on caring for others that we will become holy and good. And then finally for Peter, it means accepting that wherever God leads, we will follow, no matter how difficult or challenging it might be. Peter fell into trouble because he was not willing to endure what he had to endure on that night. To be faithful to Jesus. He wasn't willing to look like he had abandoned his friend. He wasn't willing to be obedient. He was willing to die for Jesus, but not to live in the way Jesus had asked him to live. And so Jesus asks him again, Peter, will you follow me no matter where I lead you? And then Peter says, is this for everyone or just for me? What about him? And Jesus says to him, this is just for you. I'm asking you to follow me. Don't worry about anybody else. How can we be restored? Well, the trick, I think, and I wish Judas had had opportunity to learn this before he gave up and quit, and many Christians do. Many Christians fail Jesus and then fail to follow him. We somehow are under the impression that perfection, never having let God down, is the goal of all Christians, to the point that if we do let him down, we might as well turn back and walk away because we never were as good as we thought we could be. But the story of Peter reminds us that there is restitution, that there's reconciliation, that there's redemption for all people. But it doesn't mean it comes at no cost to us. We have to do the hard work of recognizing why it was we failed. And I think this is what Jesus was doing with Peter, helping him to understand what had led him into sin. And Jesus says, if you want to follow me, you're going to have to live into different patterns. Peter was self-centered. Peter was egotistical. Peter was very strong-willed. And he cared a great deal about what others thought about him. All those things would have to change if he were to follow Jesus. But Jesus doesn't act as though Peter is starting over with him. He doesn't say to him again like he did on that seashore, follow me. Peter already had followed him. Jesus restores him from where he is. And they move on together. I think that is one of the great graces of Jesus. Can you imagine other human beings and what they would do to someone who betrayed them the way that Peter had betrayed Jesus? Now, you or I might not think it's a big deal to be denied before people, but I'll tell you one story in which I felt like I was in the space. I was working at a church, and I had designed an Easter musical. Jen and I were directing it. And we had someone else doing the music. We were doing the drama. We had built the set. We had done all these things. I had gotten an advertising committee together. We were going to try and market the thing and get it out there. I was very excited. I mean, we got a full cast. It was teens and adults. I mean, what did we have, 90 people in the production? I mean, it was a big deal for us, right? And then I found out that I didn't have all the proper permissions. I didn't go through all the right committees for that thing. And so suddenly, and like this moment where I was all hands on deck for this huge production, I was so excited about it. It was the first time we were going to do it. We thought this is going to get people in to see the gospel. And I got called into a committee meeting. And it was the administrative council of that church, which was huge. And I got taken to the tool shed by those folks. And I had talked to at least 5 committees, but I had neglected one. And I had gone to the senior pastor and I had asked him for permission and advice, and he never told me to go to this committee. And so I did everything, and then right there, we're going to cancel the whole thing. And as I was taking my licking, that pastor never said a word. He never said he came to me, I forgot. He never said anything. Now, if you've been in a moment like that where you've just been hung out to dry, and you're getting whipped and beat up, and the person who could save you says nothing to you, nothing in your defense, how do you feel about that person? Jesus had that experience with Peter. And yet Jesus wanted nothing more than for Peter not only to follow him, but to be entrusted with leadership in his church. What kind of grace is that? I mean, we could maybe fool ourselves into thinking that Jesus saw something in Peter that he didn't see anybody else, but I have a sense, because of the way the whole Bible goes, God's choice of Jacob, of Isaac, of Joseph, of David, that it's not about the quality of the people, but it's about what God knows he can do with someone who is sacrificed to his will. But it's going to take the hard work of recognizing what led us into sin in the first place. And we're going to have to turn away from those patterns. And if we do, I think we can find, like Peter, that Jesus is more than willing to restore us.